The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is the most wonderful time of the year. The Christmas season is upon us, 2 days away from Christmas morning. And John Hancock, Michael Kelly, and John Hancock Jr. in on the DGS today.
How's it going?
Great. You're in from Chicago, Illinois. How was your flight in? How was the airport?
Airport was good. It was busy. I flew in Midway on Southwest. I always prefer that. You know, it's a much smaller airport. O'Hare is just off the rails. You get there, I mean, there's millions of people, feels like, just
drastic
all going
temperature
through. Yeah.
Difference.
Yeah.
How about Lambert? Was it hopping?
Lambert was hopping. Yeah, Lambert was hopping when I got here. But it was an easy flight in. Temperature, it was in the 30s in Chicago when I came down here. Yeah. Not too bad. Not too bad. We were much colder a couple weeks ago.
Now, I noticed that you're wearing a Sox cap, and for those who've listened to Hancock and Kelly, we know that you're our NFL insider and a huge Cardinal fan. Is this just trying to have some cover up and some cred up on the streets, or what?
A little bit street cred, more so. My hair was a disaster, and I was looking at the airport for a hat so I could wear on the flight. I was looking at the options. Nah, I'd rather be 6 feet under than put a Cubs hat on. Bears,
yeah,
neutral to the Bears. I saw the Sox. I'm like, yeah, they're down on their luck. I got nothing against them. We both, can't stand the Cubs. This is the least offensive option in the store. Threw it on. And here we are.
And the Cubs hat and, logo, it really is not attractive.
It's disgusting.
I don't like their colors.
The contrast in colors, I mean, they're a hokey organization. They have been for 100 years. And unfortunately, our friends in Cleveland collapsed and let them win that title in 2016, a day that will forever live in infamy.
That was a rough one, yeah. 1908, I think, was the last time they had won World Series.
Now, Cubs, we had our implosion this year as Cardinal fans the last year or so.
Yeah.
The Cubs have been rebuilding for a while, haven't they?
Yeah, we actually had the same record this year.
As the Cubs?
Both underperformed expectations. They've been trying to spend a little bit. They got Kyle Tucker from the Astros, but I think they're unfortunately in a better position than we are this year.
Oh yeah, I think the Cubs probably win the division. Although the Brewers, the Brewers seem to, out of nothing, always seem to be there. And they lost their manager last year, and they got a new manager. It didn't matter. They still won the division.
They feel like the old, we used to be.
Yeah,
just without an Albert Pujols.
Yeah, I mean, they're a perennial front-running team, and you've got to account for them in the division. We're going to visit with Bernie Miklas later this hour and maybe get some of his thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Hey, how about that sad news coming out of Ted Drews with the kid hitting some folks? It sounds like now we're learning it may have been on the parking lot.
Yeah.
Close to six people have been injured. When I first heard this story, John, we've all been there, right? We've all gone to Ted Drews for ice cream or after ball games or even now at Christmas time. You hate to hear it, but it also felt a little like Groundhog Day because we've had these issues out in front of Ted Drews before.
Yeah, and I don't understand. Part of it is just the amount of reckless driving that takes place in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And you really have to be careful navigating these roads down here because people pay no attention to stoplights, stop signs. They drive too fast. We had the poor girl from Indiana who lost her legs in a reckless driving incident by a guy who should have been in prison. It's very upsetting.
Yeah,
it seems to be a plague.
Right, and if this is, Ted Drews is one of the faces of St. Louis. And on any given night, particularly in the summer or spring now, especially around Christmas time, there's a lot of human beings right there on what's a very busy road. And it seems to me that would be a place that we'd have some traffic calming measures, et cetera, because we've had issues there in the past. I just hope we're able to figure out what happened here and then find some long-term sustainable changes because we've been here before. We've had these types of accidents in front of Ted Drews before.
And this guy, of course, fled the scene, and that's what he ultimately is arrested for. But he came back apparently and turned himself in. But the people easily could have been killed there.
Oh,
easily,
no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So hard pivot here, but what's your favorite Ted Drews flavor when you go?
You know, I like the one that's got the Snicker bar in it.
Uh-huh.
That's a good one.
The Snickers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Kit Kat bar in the concrete is very good, too.
Ooh, nice.
Oh, I just play the hits chocolate.
That's all you do is just some chocolate syrup in the white?
There's the chocolate custard.
I'm peanut butter cups.
Yeah.
Peanut butter cups cannot be messed up. And you put ice cream around peanut butter cups?
I don't know.
What? You're not a peanut butter cup guy?
I mean, I'll eat it, but
really?
I don't go out of my way for a peanut butter cup. Because the peanut butter, I don't know, and chocolate, it's just, I don't know.
Well, it's the salt, it's the sweet,
whatever it is.
It's the chocolate.
I don't care for it.
Okay, so let me, just to find out, are you a Mounds guy over a peanut butter cup?
I do like me some Mounds.
Almond Joy, I believe, right?
Well, and my favorite is the Mr. Good Bar. It's got the Rice Krispies in it.
Oh, now that sounds good.
That's very good.
But you would go for a Mounds bar. So if where you would rank peanut butter cups down at the bottom of your
of
candy
that list,
selection?
Yeah.
Wow.
His candy selection is pretty much, if Babe Ruth, if it was around for Babe Ruth to endorse it back then, it's pretty high on his list.
But have you guys noticed, like, your schnooks and stuff, maybe you guys don't have this. In my schnooks, you have to go through this chute to wait for to them to tell
to
you
check
which
out. Yeah.
checkout
uh-huh.
you're going to go to.
Right.
And in that chute, you're surrounded by candy. And I bet 3/4 of the candy now, or at least in the area where I'm waiting, is all peanut butter cup related. Reese's.
Huh.
Yeah.
And so I'm a Whole Foods shopper, so they have their version of sweets, but you're not seeing Reese's. Up there, you're seeing some 99% dark chocolate covered almonds.
Yeah, you're overpaying.
I pay for the experience.
At those Whole Foods. You walk to your grocery store?
I do, yeah.
That's a luxury, isn't it?
Yeah, 2.5 blocks.
Yeah.
Can't beat it.
Was it about 2.5 miles for you to drive to yours?
Yep, got to drive to Schnucks. Just a couple miles.
I had a couple of people walk up to me on Sunday in the grocery store and say how much they like Hancock and Kelly. I told you. It's amazing that people, by the way, everybody thinks my name's Hancock Kelly. It's, they come up and say, Hancock Kelly, because they don't know which one you are necessarily. And then I try to tell them, oh, well, I'm the smart one.
How can they not tell us apart?
Well, I don't think they know if we're the Democrat or the Republican.
Well, that's not good.
But I would hope that by looking at me, they'd know I'm the Democrat. And by looking at you, I think you're the Republican.
Well, I don't
know. Tim Walz may have thrown some people.
I never thought of it that way. Tim Walz. What happens to him?
He's still the governor.
Well, I know, happens, right?
He's done.
Yeah.
He's done. Yeah. She's done. They're both done.
Oh, well, she's definitely done.
Yeah.
Governor of California. Pull the Nixon.
Yeah, we'll see.
The Newsom's just going to be too tough out there, but I guess he's term limited, et cetera. But I think she's best off. We're talking about the vice president. Would probably be best off going on being the president of a college or sitting on some boards, don't you think?
Well, we'll have to find out about that.
Isn't that what Dan Quayle went and did?
I think he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan Quayle's still out there. He's still rocking.
Over
his
there
son,
in Indiana.
Yeah, his son ran for Congress and lost.
Uh-huh.
But, Dan Quayle is still a thing. When we come back, we're going to do the National Political Year in Review. Man, it was a year ago. Just almost a year ago when we had that fiasco for Speaker of the House, 15 separate votes. Remember that?
Yep.
We're going to talk about the year in review when we come back after this on Camo X.
I'm Michael Kelly, that's John Hancock, and it is time for our National Political Year in Review. And John, what a year it has been. It's hard to remember, but a little over almost a year ago, we were watching Speaker McCarthy fight for his life at the United States House of Representatives, where Matt Gaetz had made a challenge as to whether or not he would be able to be Speaker. He was successful in ultimately toppling Matt Gaetz as Speaker McCarthy, because the Democrats didn't play ball with the Republicans. What a way to start the year.
It was crazy. And you went through a whole cycle of people, including Steve Scalise, and nobody could put the votes together. And finally, after days and days of inability to accomplish anything, Republicans settled on then little-known Mike Johnson of Louisiana, who became the Speaker. And with a very slim majority. Johnson, I think you can argue, actually had the House running pretty well, given that thin majority, for most of the year.
At the same time, Speaker Johnson was having to navigate the world of Donald Trump, that ever-present face inside the Republican Party. But at the beginning of the year, it wasn't a foregone conclusion that he would be the Republican nominee. In fact, if we look back at it, John, it was Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, who most folks thought had the money, had the resources, had the infrastructure, and would likely be that guy who would pull it together for the Republican Party as they would be turning the page on Donald Trump.
Yeah, it was a lot of the pundits were certain that DeSantis was going to be the Republican nominee. Trump was going through his myriad of legal problems throughout the course of the year. As the campaign, though, began to unfold, DeSantis proved to not be a particularly effective candidate, and he was particularly ineffective in places where retail politics is so important, like Iowa.
Yeah.
And so you began to see Trump win and win and win, and then the candidates, there were many. Vivek Ramaswamy was a Republican candidate for president. It ended up, DeSantis gets out, and the last person standing was Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
Which surprised a lot of people, but she never really got close to Donald Trump.
No, but she caused some problems for Donald Trump towards the end there as she started to raise some money. Donald Trump even going at threatening her, saying anybody who gave money to Nikki Haley would be persona non grata inside his Republican Party. She seems to be the one Republican who's not found their way back to a place of favorability with Donald Trump. I realize she endorsed him in the election. She kind of carried the water, but she's not getting one of those carrots that others got, is she?
No. So, you know, the future, the post-Donald Trump future of the Republican Party is anything but settled. But now we're gonna have 4 years of a Donald Trump presidency.
Well, and leading up to those 4 years, John, as he was putting together his campaign, he was running against Joe Biden, probably the most unpopular yep. sitting president that had been there in a while in terms of approval rating. A guy who was not above 50%, neither was Donald Trump. There was constant rumors and questions about whether or not Joe Biden had the stamina, the staying power to be able to go. There were questions about him starting to lose his faculties. And it wasn't until we saw the meltdown that took place at that terrible debate that he winds up pulling out. But for about a year and a half there, you and I thought, well, there wasn't likely he was going to be the candidate. I wind up acquiescing, saying, no, Joe Biden's a go. You were always skeptical.
Yeah, I never thought they would run the guy. It just didn't make any sense. Now, the way they got rid of him proved to not be very helpful to them by installing effectively Kamala Harris as the candidate without going through a vetting process, without going through a primary process. I think that ultimately hurt them. And Biden staying in that race for as long as he did a real great disservice. And I think will damage his legacy somewhat.
After that unbelievable debate, which was just a complete meltdown, nobody could believe what they were seeing. There was questions as to whether or not Biden would stay in the race. George Clooney, of all people, wrote an op-ed saying Joe Biden's got to go. That kind of started a topple on the left, if you will, and eventually Joe Biden says he's going to pull out, and the same day he pulls out, he endorses Kamala Harris. She takes to center stage, John. As we slid to the conventions, the Republicans had a fine convention, but it wasn't a home run. It wasn't a knock it out of the park. It was a bit slow, and then, of course, we had the assassination, which we're going to come back to.
Right.
But the Democratic convention really was rip-roaring and had a lot of the energy that people thought, oh, this was the change the Democratic Party needed.
Yeah, well, Harris got a real bump when she first got in the race, and that's not unusual when something like that happens. And that bump really did crescendo at the Democratic convention. But really, you know, in terms of her polling numbers, she never got beyond where Biden was.
And the story of the year, the individual of the year was Donald Trump, who ran an incredible campaign, one that I thought was laughable, John, when it first started. He doubled down on a lot of his extremist rhetoric that many people thought was problematic. He continued to push the tariffs narrative, which was contrary to where the Republican Party was. He was focused on immigration, talking about that wall that Mexico was going to build that they never did. He said he continued to attack Donald Trump or Joe Biden. And as it switched to Kamala Harris, when people thought he'd have a hard time attacking her, he continued the pressure there. And then we had that day in Ohio where something that we had not seen in quite some time in American politics, the assassination attempt on Donald Trump.
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania, that changed the trajectory of that race and really brought everything to a pause, did it not?
Well, it did. And you had that iconic photo of Trump being lifted up by the Secret Service, blood streaming down his side of his face and hand raised in defiance. Pretty iconic photograph. And, yeah, I think that had an effect on the election. Certainly, the second assassination attempt at Mar-a-Lago later also had an effect. But at the end of the day, I think the American people were just tired of Joe Biden's policies. They certainly understood they were paying a lot more for the cost of living than they had previously. And the government had gone through years, both administrations, Trump and Biden, of just throwing massive amounts of money into the economy and you know, hastening that inflationary effect.
And the voters not only rewarded Donald Trump with an election, they also said to the House of Representatives, you can stay under control of the Republicans, and they gave control of the United States Senate to the Republicans. Donald Trump's got himself set up nicely as we go into 2025 in terms of having both branches of government.
Well, he does. The House minority is very thin. There'll be some special elections this spring that will maybe get the Republicans back to 5, maybe 6 seat majority, but that's still very thin. And of course, the Senate is 53-47 Republican now. They'll be able to pass bills out of the Senate through the reconciliation process. That's a process that involves spending money, taxes, where you don't need to meet the 60 vote threshold that every other policy issue is going to do, which tells me that the Republicans ought to be able to pass a tax package. They'll be able to fund the government. But in terms of comprehensive immigration reform, I don't see that happening.
And politically, probably the biggest story that came from the end of the year was the appearance of Elon Musk suddenly becoming a political force, playing a role inside the Trump administration and inside the Republican Party.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, before the year ended, we saw that Elon Musk perhaps single-handedly spiked the deal to keep the debt ceiling from expanding. Eventually, the Republicans worked out another piece of legislation and got it passed. But yeah, Musk has a very large influence on that caucus. There's no doubt about that.
One would hope that 2025 will not be as exciting as 2024 was, because it's not a presidential election. But boy, if it's even half as exciting as the one we just lived through, we're going to have a lot to cover in 2025.
Yeah, you know, I'm making a prediction. Just knowing the personality types of Donald Trump and Elon Musk, I don't think that relationship is going to last very long. I think something's going to happen. I don't know what. Something's going to happen, though, and there'll be a falling out there. And I look for that to happen, you know, in the first half of the year. So we'll see if that prediction comes true or not. We can check that out when we do the year of end review next year at this time.
He is John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. Stick around right now. We've got the news on KMOX. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. It's the DGS on KMOX. It's Michael Kelly and John Hancock sitting in. And, well, we've got two John Hancocks. And most importantly, we have one of the best one of the best sports minds and all of the country joining us now. He's none other than the famous Bernie Miklas.
Yeah, our visit with Bernie. Merry Christmas, Bernie.
Well, it's good to be with you guys. And you're always an inspiration to me, because it just shows that we can have political differences but still get along and be cordial, amiable, rather pleasant individuals.
Well,
and to eat in each other's company. I respect the heck out of that.
Very kind of you to say, sir. And I respect the heck out of the $12.5 million contract that Paul Goldschmidt has signed with the New York Yankees. I think Goldie could have a pretty special comeback season in that New York Yankee Stadium.
You know, John, last year, the first 3 months were really bad for Goldie. There's no glossing over that. Numbers are horrible. Now, the final three months of the season, he did really well. I mean, you know, he still his plate discipline was a problem. He didn't draw many walks. That means his on-base percentage was very low for his standards. But he slugged over 470. He hit a lot of doubles. He hit a good amount of homers, and he had a bounce back. He was about 16-17% above the league average offensively. And if you also look at some of the StatCast stuff, I mean, he still hits the ball very, very hard. He has a really good average exit velocity. He ran into some bad luck last year. And I'm not saying he's going to be the 2022 version of Goldschmidt. But as he goes to Yankee Stadium, which is known as a place that really favors left-handed batters, but what people don't talk about enough is that if you compare all the ballparks in the majors, Yankee Stadium is also one of the best ballparks in the majors for right-handed power hitters compared to Busch Stadium, which is ranked 22nd over the last 3 years. So I think the conditions are favorable for him to have a nice bounce-back season and help the Yankees out.
Yeah, and when he's right, when Goldschmidt is right, he hits the ball the other way, and he hits it hard the other way, and that right field porch is awfully inviting over there.
Yeah, no doubt he does. He will hit it the other way. That's a good observation because he's done that more often in his career. And I think, too, that, you know, listen, he doesn't need to be motivated. The guy goes hard all the time. In fact, he's one of these guys that, like, works so hard at everything he does that sometimes you wonder if he's, like, working against himself. He gets worn out or whatever. But he cares deeply. And, listen, this is going to give him the best chance he's had since I think the 22 Cardinals had a legitimate chance to make a deep playoff run. It just didn't happen. So with that behind him, you know, this is going to be the best chance Goldie's ever had to get a World Series ring, you know, in 2024, because the Yankees are highly capable. There's a lot of other really good teams out there too, but they'd have to be on that list of contenders to go all the way.
Yep. And then Bernie, pivoting to the college football playoffs, obviously none of these first round games were particularly close. And I think you can make the case that Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, and Texas are the four best teams remaining in the playoffs, and you have Oregon having to play Ohio State. Do you think as this thing evolves going forward, we'll see a change to how the playoffs are structured with the seeding and automatic buys?
That's great questions, Michael. I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to have to change it, though, because you have a situation this year with the way it's set up, which was agreed upon by all the league commissioners and everything else. I mean, it wasn't a willy-nilly thing. There was a wide, you know, universal agreement on to set it up the way they did. But you have a situation where Penn State has got an easier path to the semifinals or even the finals, but they've got an easier path than Oregon and Ohio State, who actually were, you know, finished ahead of them in the Big Ten standings. You know, now that something's wrong with that. I mean, Penn State should not have an easier path to the Final Four than Oregon, which went undefeated and won the conference and who beat Penn State in the conference championship. So that's the classic example. There are some other ones too. You know, the fact that Ohio State's got to play Oregon again next game, whereas Penn State gets Boise State. Now, Boise State, I wouldn't sleep on them. They're really good, and they got the great running back, but it's still not right, you know. So I hope that they'll tweak it and make some changes. And the team that intrigues me going forward is Notre Dame. I mean, we keep wondering, well, did they play a tough schedule? I mean, how great are they? They're good, very good, but are they great? And every time they play, they look better and better. So I think the Fighting Irish are going to be in the middle of this thing, too, in terms of a real threat to win it all.
That's your sleeper pick, I guess, huh?
A little bit. You know, I tell you who's interesting to me is Arizona State. I think it's probably a year too soon, but they are they're on fire. And, man, can they put points on the board? And young coach of theirs, he's fearless. He's afraid of nothing. I think they're a team that could be kind of scary next time out.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I just saw that Army's running back is actually going to Arizona State next year. I think in the revamped Big 12, they're definitely going to keep being a team to watch.
He's a great coach. He really is. And they've been a fun story. And I hope that, you know, it's hard to explain because I don't want to diminish what Indiana did this season. I mean, 11-1 going into the playoff is 11-1. And heck, I was talking to Tom Ackerman yesterday on Sports on a Sunday Morning, and he's the Indiana man, as you all know. But to me, the team that was supposed to do well, and everyone was talking about how, you know, Tennessee's going to go in Ohio State and win and all this other stuff, which I didn't buy. But to me, the team that was the most disappointing in that opening round was, in fact, Tennessee, you know, rather than Indiana, because I think Tennessee had more horsepower. They had more things going for it, especially on defense. And they played a terrible game in getting blown out early at Ohio State.
Yeah, those games lacked a lot of drama for sure over the weekend.
You know, I thought Clemson gave it a good go. I know it was a 14-point margin, and as someone who invested in the game legally, I might add, I was kind of sweating it out because I took Texas. I was pretty confident that they could, you know, I would win with them laying 13.5. I was kind of hollering at the TV set when Clemson cut it to 7 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I also had Texas legally on that, and that got a little bit too dicey at the end. Didn't think I'd be sweating them getting the first down to run out the clock.
It's going to be a great tournament. I mean, just seeing those four games played in home stadiums, I know the games themselves weren't. We were all, you know, hoping for, you know, cliffhangers and all that. But just seeing the environment for playoff games, you know, with all that passion and energy within those home stadiums, I thought that was pretty cool.
Shifting over to the National Football League, playoff picture's beginning to get a bit clearer. Chiefs just keep on winning, man.
They're unreal. It's like one of those, you know, Monty Python movies or something. You know, people keep sticking swords in them or whatever, and it doesn't matter. They just win. And Patrick Mahomes is obviously – I don't know that any athlete's ever healed up better from injuries than him. But, they keep adding wide receivers to the lineup. And if they're offensive line, and I think that's the key to the whole thing, can they protect Patrick Mahomes? Because they're going to encounter some better defenses in the postseason. And – he's never, his whole career with the Chiefs, he's never been in a situation for the entire year where there's been more pass rush pressure on him, more hits on him, the sack rate's really high, and that kind of thing eventually gets to you. So I don't know if they can continue to navigate their way through all of these close games. It's unbelievable how many one-score games in a row that they've won, but they find a way. It's that championship pedigree, that championship character. And that really does mean something once the weather gets cold.
Clearly it does. Looking over at the NFC, Lions, Eagles, I've got a strange feeling about the Minnesota Vikings. They just keep getting it done.
Well, I'm with you. A big part of that is Detroit's got a heck of a team. And if they were healthy, Detroit would be the easy pick for me as like the team to beat in the NFC West. But they're all torn up by injuries. It's really kind of unfair. I mean, they've lost so many players, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and it's really made them very vulnerable. So then I look at Philadelphia, and listen, Philadelphia has been on a roll until – I watched that game yesterday. It was a heck of a game, really fun. They lost in Landover, Maryland yesterday. But the headline coming out of that for Philadelphia is that, you know, Jalen Hurts left that game early with a concussion. Is that something that's going to linger? Is that something that's going to keep him out for a while? Is it something that's going to impact him? We don't know. But I agree with you that we keep waiting for some kind of bubble to pop with the Minnesota Vikings. But they had all kinds of reasons why they could have lost that game yesterday. But they made the plays. They keep making plays. Sam Darnold is a incredible story this year. And I tell you what, their young coach, head coach is – very good at what he does. So I think we all need to stop collectively sleeping on the Vikings. I don't know. Again, it comes down to the Lions' health and Jalen Hurts, and there's other factors, but that team deserves to be treated as a real contender as far as the outside view.
Well, we always enjoy our visits and the insight we receive from Bernie Michalas.
Hancock Senior and Junior here with Michael Kelly. We're sitting in on the DGS, and week 16 of the NFL is coming to an end this week, guys. Our own Joe Buck will be out there calling the game between the Saints and the Packers. But then the NFL season, or the next week, week 17, starts on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And it's not on normal television. It's going not. To be on Netflix.
Streaming.
I was not around for the Mike Tyson fight.
Lucky you.
Yeah, many of the people who had sat down to want to watch the Mike Tyson fight could not wind up watching the event live. They had major streaming problems. And I just wonder, on Christmas Day, when there's truly nothing on, and we know the NFL is king, whether or not Netflix is going to be able to weather the amount of people going on to watch this, or we're going to have another NFL, or we're going to have another Mike Tyson-like fiasco.
I don't know. I didn't watch the fight. I didn't sign up to watch. Did you watch the fight?
I did, yeah. It was just buffering nonstop. You really couldn't watch any of it, get in a rhythm. It was just break up and then...
And you didn't have to pay extra for the fight, right? You just had to be a subscriber of Netflix like these football games.
Yeah, and it started freezing up other shows on Netflix during the pre-fight. Before I switched over, I was watching something else, and that started to buffer, and it was impacting that. So you got to hope they upgraded the servers.
Well, it's just a volume problem, right? Yeah, they just had too many people.
Not enough bandwidth.
But you have to imagine on Christmas Day, a lot of people are going to be sitting at home with their Wi-Fi wanting to watch the NFL, and normally they'd sit on their couch and do that.
You would think. You would think. I don't like, but, you know, I'm a dinosaur. I admit it. But I like my football on the networks. Where,
I'm with you.
Know.
I'm with you.
And then when they go to Prime, Thursday night games, and then the thing they did to us last year.
Peacock?
Yes.
Yeah,
that almost should have violated some law.
I agree. Like, they throw some Notre Dame games on Peacock, and I'm not watching that Notre Dame game. I mean, I'm not paying that $10 to watch them. Probably it was the NIU game that they lost, but...
I think the idea of pay-per-view NFL, it just I like their product. I don't necessarily like the NFL. But like you said, after last year with those Peacock games where we had to pay $10 and sign up.
That was
and
a
then
playoff game.
I don't want to do it again. And, I just will not participate.
Yeah, and Red Zone now has commercials, so it's no longer 7 hours of commercial-free football.
Is that right?
Yeah, end of an era. I mean, the NFL is king. They know they're king, and... Unfortunately, we're getting pinched every which way as the consumers.
So you've got me onto something now that I never had done before, this multi-view.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good way
what
to
do
watch
you mean,
football.
Multi-view?
Tell the man what to
so,
do.
So, yeah, if you got multi-view, you can watch 3-4 games at once just in a quad box on your own TV. You can flip which one has the sound. You can click on one. It goes full
provided
screen.
You're a subscriber of the NFL package, right?
Correct, yeah. You have to have Sunday ticket.
I got that, yeah.
But, yeah, up in Chicago, I have two TVs next to each other, like full screen. So I have 8 games just going. So that noon window, I got action all across the board. It's like my own personal red zone.
What's driving your, like, I just like the drama of the game. I have a hard time watching several games at once. Is it fantasy football that's driving your interest in wanting to see them all at once like that?
Yeah, it's fantasy football, you know, other avenues that, you know, are soon to be legal in Missouri.
Yeah.
You know, really just enhances the experience. But it's fun seeing everything. You're not going to miss anything. You know, and you can control.
Well, and the thing about a football game. So a football game is on for 3 hours and some minutes. And in that 3 hours and some minutes, there maybe is 18 and a half minutes worth of where the ball is being snapped and something's happening.
Right.
And they have managed to take 18 and a half minutes of action, spread it out over 3 hours, sell an ungodly number of commercials, and, you know, and make us all like it.
No.
They make us all like
it. Well, but at the end of the day, it's only going to be 3 hours and some minutes. A college game, who knows what you're signing up for?
That is, yeah. You might as well go
5 or 6 hours.
You play a round of golf.
Yes, you know, really good.
What is it with a college game?
I don't know. What is it about football in general? You know, football, I know this is blasphemy. It is horrible to go see in person because it's just everybody's sitting around patting each other on the bum waiting for the next play.
Yeah, hockey, basketball, much better to go to live. Baseball, all better. Football, I'll prefer to be on a couch or at a bar every time.
You caught a good basketball game yesterday.
I did. The bragging rights, it was unfortunate. Mizzou just couldn't hit their free throws and lost a close one. But
they lost on the boards, too. They got out-rebounded.
Yeah,
it was
ridiculous. Well, Illinois is all these Europeans. I don't know where they're getting them from, but they're their starting lineup. They got Slovenia, Croatia. That's what we ought to do. I mean, these guys were playing in the Spanish Pro League. It's where Luka Doncic played before he went to the NBA. And then they're coming over here to play college. They're professionals.
Both teams were pretty good, though, record-wise, correct?
Yeah. Mizzou, only loss, I believe, was to Memphis early on.
First game.
Now we're 10-2, probably not going to be ranked. And we have a good team, but it's going to be tough to make the tournament.
How did they not get ranked after beating Kansas?
Kansas, I don't know. We'll certainly have a chance. The SEC, I think we have 5 of the top 7 right now. It's going to be tough deck. Obviously, we went 0-18 last year in conference play. So can
Eli Drinkwitz continue to put this together, you guys, in today's world where, you know, the Notre Dames, Alabamas, Ohio State, Michigans are always going to be the big programs. And, of course, you have the NIL money. But, you know, he had the top receiver in this Luther Burden. He's had a quality quarterback. Is he still going to be able to farm good players in there and be able to compete?
Yeah.
I think so.
Really?
I think so, yeah. I mean, Drink, I think he does resonate with a lot of those guys. You know, we're not going to have the money of a Michigan where they can give, you know, $3-plus million to a quarterback. But, you know, I think we'll continue to grow. I think the SEC spotlight certainly helps. And we've got another easy schedule. We're playing the same teams this year or next year as we played this year, which will definitely help.
And he's a good coach. And I do think part of the allure for players is the quality of the head coach. And I think Drinkwitz has a good reputation nationally. And, you know, and it all comes down to you've got to recruit your offensive linemen if you're gonna win in college, in any level of football. It's the interior line play.
I know, but this is no longer recruiting a kid. This is all about paying people now, and I just don't know how Mizzou's dollars are going to stack up against Alabama's.
Hey, there's a lot of money out at Mizzou, man.
All right.
A lot of
I'll take your word at it. Yeah. I mean, heck, they were in the hunt this year.
They were.
They played well this year. Yeah. I mean, they could
probably be in the playoffs if they don't fold against South Carolina late.
Yeah, those Cocks were hard to beat.
They were indeed. He's Michael Kelly, and I'm John Hancock. John Hancock Jr. with us as well. Next hour, we've got Dave Murray going to join the DGS with us. That's always a fun conversation. We're going to get into some Christmas songs because it is that time of year. The Christmas season is upon us, and the news is upon us on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.